All right. Well, like Clint said, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our experiences on collecting data with an integrating direct detector. And I also want to thank Clint and Bridget for getting me out of not one but 2 days of teaching. So thanks. So I'm going to give you the warts and all story. So we recently have a D64. That's ostensibly why I was invited. So we only have had it for a few months now, so I'll tell you about some of the adventures we've had. Okay. There's a pointer. So roughly the things I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give a comparison of integrating versus counting detectors, show the pros and cons of each. I will give you some of my thoughts on some of the potential advantages of an integrating camera. And I'll talk about our experiences with the DE. That's the camera that I have most experience with. I'll tell you about the DE64. And then I'll give my pitch for what I think is a fair comparison of detectors. And I'm feeding back. Okay, so this is a sophisticated audience, so we probably all know this, but so briefly, the difference between a counting and an integrating detector. With an integrating detector, the electron detection results in a certain number of counts per frame, and the frames are summed up, and so this is just an integrating image of a certain exposure. And so you compare that to the counting mode, and you use a much lower dose rate, and individual electron hits are counted instead of depositing some amount of energy. They're all counted as one hit or not a hit. And the big advantage there is it removes this so-called Landau noise, right? So with an integrating detector, each individual electron might deposit some different amounts of energy, and so that difference in energy deposited gives some noise that you don't have with accounting. with the integrated counting mode, you have lots and lots of these counting frames, and those are binned up into sets that they're summed up. And then you get your movie of bins of those frames, whereas each frame here is it's analogous to each frame of our integrating detector. So we've heard about DQE, and so here's a paper, some data from Nico's lab, comparing estimating the DQE for various detectors, and so the counting detectors, detector is K2, and it has a much higher DQE than the integrating detectors, which are here. So here's the Falcon 1, 2, and then, that's the DE12, and then the Falcon, and then there are our old school CCDs. So the DQE is definitely better for counting than integrating, mostly due to that Landau noise. But there's another key difference between counting and integrating that is not talked about as much, okay? So with an integrating detector, we have we use a much hotter beam, right? So in fact, you want to. You need to have a lot. You have to have more counts per frame, substantially than you do for counting. So you have for about the same dose, on our integrating detector, we have about a 1 second exposure time versus about a 10 second exposure time for the K2. the potential advantage that you have for an integrating detector is it has a potential for higher throughput. Now, of course, I'm going to come to that in a second. Okay. And then the other thing that is an unknown is because you're using a much brighter beam, the beam-induced motion will be different. It's not necessarily, it's hard to say whether it will be better or worse, but it will definitely be different. So for instance, with the data that we collect, our beam deposits about 60 electrons per angstrom squared per second. Compare that to like accounting where it's about 6 electrons per angstrom squared per second. So I can say the beam-induced motion will be different. Whether or not it will be better, it's unclear. Yep.
So I'm not sure I understand what you mean there. Do you mean that versus time it's different, or do you mean versus...
Versus time. So the rate at which particles move will be different because the excitation rate, the...
But not versus fluence is what I want to be clear of.
Versus fluence?
Fluence, number of electrons per unit area.
Oh, correct. No, not right. Yeah, I'm just talking about the rate at which particles move in response to the beam. And there's some papers. I can't recall who, but it showed this, like that certain particles move faster with a weak beam than they do with a hot beam. Okay. So the potential advantage of integrating is, we have the exposure takes 10 times is faster, right? So we can, you know, if you're collecting images one right after the other, you could collect potentially 10 times more. That's in fact not necessarily true because it all depends on what your rate limiting step is in your data acquisition scheme, right? So if you spend a lot of time focusing, then maybe it's not that readout time is not your rate limiting step. but I want to highlight that because this is a drum that I beat a lot, that throughput is important because we're throwing away up to 90% of our particles. So it can be advantageous to image a lot more, right? So if you can image faster, that can be a good thing. And like I said, yeah, it's saying we could have potentially better beam-induced motion and sort of back of the envelope, what we observe compared our beam-induced motion, the amount that our particles move, it seems to be less than others have reported. And so that's not been systematically tested, though. Okay, so like I said, throughput is important, right? We want more particles per unit time. And so if you just have a reconstruction, calculate the resolution as a function of the number of particles. You can plot it like this, or you can plot it as the spatial frequency versus the log and none of the particles, and it's, it always seems to be linear. And I call this a reslog plot. And so the big take home there is any incremental improvement in resolution requires logarithmically more data. So an argument could be made that even with lower quality, okay, so there's a lot going on in this figure here, but so what I did in this paper was we took our best data, and that's here, and I took that, and that's this reslog plot. And then here, I took those Eulers and I randomized the Eulers for 50% of the particles. Right, and I did a reslog plot, and it's just lower, but it's still right, right? So that's the reconstruction, and so even with 50% of the particles wrong, you still get a good reconstruction. And if I could collect more and more of that data, I could get to about the same resolution, assuming that this reslog plot continues to be linear as it always seems to be. Okay, so. Now, if you relate this back to DQE, right? So if you don't necessarily have to have that very best DQE, which is sort of analogous to here, to still get to good resolution as long as you have sufficient throughput, okay? And finally, I mentioned this in John's talk, the lower DQE at lower spatial frequency can be compensated for by higher dose. And this is something the Nikos show. Well, this is what John and Nico, and it's been shown many times. So if you, even though an integrating detector has lower DQE at low spatial frequency, which is that's what we care about, right? Because if you can align your particles sufficiently, if you get enough of them, you'll always get back the resolution. So even though it's lower DQE at low spatial frequency, you can recover that by having more and more dose, right? So with a 60 electrons per angstrom squared data, you're not damaging your low resolution information nearly as much as you are your high resolution information. That's what that graph showed. And that's and you can see it here as well. So this was data we took on AAV, adeno-associated virus, and you can see here's a 50 electrons per angstrom squared, here's a 52 electrons per angstrom squared, and then if you dose compensate that, you can see the low resolution features are actually quite well resolved. So that's my pitch for the quality of integrating electron detectors. So now I want to move on to talking about our experiences with particularly DE cameras. And so here are some of our biggest successes. So I have this is one on the DE20. Well, these are all on the DE20. We determined a 2.8 angstrom resolution structure of adeno-associated virus. That's my record. Ken Taylor's group determined the structure of these full-length myosin filaments. This was one of my favorite papers of his because they actually could reconstitute the entire myosin filament and by aligning on the myosins, but then they also recovered these essentially intrinsically disordered proteins. They had no secondary structure that are holding these filaments together in this big bundle. And then another one, this was someone who was in our consortium, has determined a 2.8 angstrom structure of Boca virus. So you don't have to have counting. Counting is great. On a per particle basis, a counting detector is better. But if you can have more particles, you can still get really excellent resolution and reconstructions. So and here's my call for objectivity, right? So let's endeavor not to be victims of confirmation bias. Right? I think many people in the field think you have to have a K2. And in fact, we've gotten criticism on grants for saying, oh, you can't do that without a K2. Right? It's not true. You can compensate for for lower DQE in different ways. In fact, there can be advantages of integrating that are not apparent in the DQE. Okay, so that's my call for objectivity. Now I want to talk about some practical things for integrating. So with counting, you want to have a low number of electrons per frame. You actually need it's sort of the opposite with an integrating detector. So this is two images of carbon with the same mean, right? So they have the same dose. So here's this one's at spot size of 4 with a 1 second exposure, 32 frames per second. Here's the same frame rate, but with a spot 8 for a 4 second exposure. So essentially, so these should contain the same information, but it's way worse on this image, and that's because with a counting detector, an integrating detector, you have to overcome the dark field noise, right? So you have to overcome the readout noise. You have to have your counts above a certain threshold level for each individual frame to sum coherently, right? And so here we're getting an image of the dark. Of the dark current, whereas here we're overcoming that sufficiently that we get all the high resolution information. Yep.
Is that effect really dark current, or is it non-linearity of the detector?
I believe it's dark, because, well,
as far as I, you know, I've talked with Hans Tietz, and he said that direct electron, they don't take a good care about doing the proper gain normalization over the intensity range, and then interpolating it. So it's, there is non-linearity, which is the same with the Falcon camera. If you don't do this several points, you know, gains with different beam intensities, and then interpolate between them, you start to get such gain. At least that's what he says. These are gain normalization artifacts.
I don't pretend to be a the engineer who designed this thing, so I don't want to comment. I don't want to dig too deeply or dig myself into a hole, but I can say that I have noticed many times that you have to achieve a certain threshold of counts, mm-hmm. Per frame to be able to compensate fully
in general, integrating detectors will be better off with the higher intensities,
yeah.
Because you get less of the dark noise. But
yeah.
In this case, this artifact in particular, I think, could probably be due to a different reason. That's
or a combination of both.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So
bring up one more point on integrating detectors, or Falcon, for example, Falcon used an integrating mode. You can sort of enter this poor man's counting regime by going to very high intensities where you start clipping off the secondary events that happen nearby, right? So you're just playing around with this Landau distribution.
Mm.
So you have to be high enough up above to get out of that regime, but there's also another one where you start to saturate, which can also be But in general, everybody should just stay away from all those and do 50 electrons per frame per second.
Right. So what you want is the best of both worlds, right? You want to be able to integrate if you want, and you want to be able to count if you want. And so that's what we initially tried to do with our DE20, and this was in collaboration with the direct electron guys. So this was using the DE20 at its maximum size and its maximum frame rate, and so in order to get up to about 60 electrons per angstrom squared, we had to take in the counting regime we had to take about an 80 second exposure for 2,560 frames, and then you bend that up just like you do with the K2 into bins and sum them up, and then you do your motion correction. But it's such a long exposure that there's a substantial motion that could happen. So when we initially tried this, we split it up into 80 bins and then motion corrected it, and it looked like this. It was pretty terrible. And then I tried it so that my guess was that maybe we hadn't sufficiently recovered the motion, so I split it up into 160 bins, and it got a lot better. And in fact, we can see tone rings in the ice, in the water ring. So that was pretty nice. But this is clearly insufficient to do real cryo-EM, 80-second exposure we can't live with. You can increase the frame rate on the DE20 by just using a fraction of the detector, so you can use the middle third of the pixels. So I tried that, and I tried that with Legendon, but it was I abandoned that approach because it's insufficient area to do targeting and autofocusing. It's just not enough pixels to be able to focus properly. So we lived with integrating on the DE20 for a long time, and now recently in May we received and installed a DE64, collected one data set, and 1 week afterwards one of the cooling lines broke and just bathed the camera in water, which wasn't great, and it also killed the chiller for the Titan, so that wasn't great. So we sent it back and got the camera reinstalled, but it's the same camera, so there's probably some mechanical problem. And the shutter got stuck. So then they came in and unfixed the shutter, unstuck the shutter, but then that showered the entire thing with dust, so you could see like all these dust particles everywhere on the images. So we sent it back again, and they serviced the shutter and rinsed the chip in acetone, so we got rid of the dust, and now we're working, it's fine. And so none of this is on DE, it's just stuff happens. So I don't have, so that's my excuse for not having a lot of results on the camera. I'll give you some of the technical aspects now. So it's about, the D64 has a 6.5 micron pixel as compared to the like a K2 that has a 5 micron or 14 for the Falcon 2. The DE guys will say that this pixel size is advantageous because it tunes the pixel, the physical pixel size, to the point spread function, and giving it a really nice MTF, which I'll talk about in a second. Another nice thing about the DE camera is it has a variable frame rate, so up to 45 frames per second, and that can be useful for tuning the counts per frame. So if your imaging condition is such that with the full frame rate you're not getting enough, you're getting those funny artifacts, you can just lower the frame rate and it'll boost up the signal per frame, and you can, you know, so it gives you some flexibility in how you're in your imaging regime. Another really nice thing is it can do this two times hardware binning that'll kick up the frame rate to about 146 frames per second. So maybe this is the camera to for best of both worlds. So I mentioned the MTF, and I just really like this figure, so I think probably a lot of us in the audience already know what MTF is, but this is really helps me to visualize what it means. So if you have something, and so the something you're imaging, and let's say it's just a wave, but it's a wave with increasing or decreasing wavelength as a function of position. Right, so your camera can only detect that so well, and so that will sort of attenuate it. That's what the image would look like. And then if you take a Fourier transform of that, that's your MTF. So your MTF is a way of talking about how well your detector can detect things at increasing spatial frequencies, ignoring the noise. And so the MTF for the DE64 is really, really good. So this is from them. So they took this MTF measurement from on our microscope, and so in orange is in their counting mode, and you can see the MTF is near the theoretical max, almost perfect. And this is the MTF for integrating mode. I mean, excuse me, did I say that right? Yeah, integrating mode in blue, counting mode in orange. And here's the DQE for integrating versus counting. So it's really quite good. And it's competitive with all the other cameras. And then we replicated those experiments using Nico's fine DQE program. And so our DQE measurement, oh, this is the MTF. That's not the DQE, because we haven't done it for counting yet. So our estimated DQE is pretty similar to theirs for integrating mode. I will say that the counting is the counting mode of data acquisition for the DE camera is not fully ready, right? So it's very much in the beta mode, so we're still testing it, and we expect it in the coming months to have that more routine and integrated into Legendon. So I'll just show you some results. So this was that first data set, and it was not a non-ideal sample. It was AAV again, our favorite sample. We only got about 26 or 2,700 particles and 4.3 angstroms resolution. And that's not terribly surprising that it's not so great, because we didn't have a really good particle distribution, couldn't really estimate the CTF very well. Again, we don't have a really good sample to test it. So here's a ribosome that we have. It's about 5.4 angstroms resolution. but it's got a pretty terrible preferred orientation, so it's still not great. So what you want is a fair comparison between cameras. And what I think this fair comparison would be is you compare reconstructions from the same sample on the same grid on the different cameras. And so then you can determine resolution not as a function of camera, but as a function of the time on the scope, how long it took you to get to that resolution. And so we were trying to take sample preparation variable out of the equation, right? That's the goal as stated here. And so what we were trying to do was collect on apoferritin, because apoferritin has high symmetry, but it's hard to align, right? So you can get a lot for a little. And we was collaborating with Bridget and Clint to prepare some samples of spotted on, and here's what we got. And it was maybe a non-optimal sample. And this is not, so I think this highlights one of the things that's not quite figured out as well yet for spotted on, and that is, you can spot it on, but you have to have the proper grid, right? You have to have with the hairs and all the self-blotting stuff all worked out right. And I think in this case, maybe the copper had started to precipitate or something, so we get this really nasty pattern, and that's what it looks like contamination, but that's actually not ice. That's copper. It doesn't melt, and so we collected some data on this. And the throughput was magnificent. So we got about 1,400 images in 12 hours, or 800,000 particles. And these are 8K by 8K images. So it's an enormous amount of data, but we didn't get anywhere with it. So, and that's troubling. So there's some problem with the data. And I think it's the data and not the camera, because the tone rings were pretty poor on the carbon. We didn't see the tone rings go out to Nyquist. Whereas on a different sample, we do. So here's just a ribosome set data set, and the tone rings do go to Nyquist. So again, warts and all, we don't have yet the data that I want to do a fair comparison. I'll just, with the remaining time, I'll show you another thing that could potentially be advantageous with the D64. You get a big area, 8K by 8K, so it could be really advantageous for tomography. And so again, in collaboration with the NRAM group, I grew some cells on grid, and they milled them for me. And so here's the area I imaged, and it's about 2.8 microns, almost 3 microns of imaging area at a sampling of 3.4 angstroms. And you can here's an image from the tilt series, and you can see the leaflets of the bilayer, so the resolution's pretty good. And we're still very preliminary with the reconstructions. But you can see these mitochondria, and this is just, I could stare at these things all day, because, like, what is going on in there? You know, we got these, you can see the matrix, and then these, I guess these are the granules. I don't know, there's a lot to be seen here. I mean, there's another one. And this one, I think we can see rough ER, which is really exciting to me, because I think those are ribosomes, because that's what the biology I study, right? That's the whole goal with this set of data, is to study what's going on in the secretory pathway. So so it's a story in progress, a work in progress still. All I have left to do is to acknowledge the people who did it, who were involved. So the all that AAV stuff was done with my lab and in collaboration with my lab of Michael Chapman, with all these folks. The FibSim stuff was done by the NRAM group. And we collaborate a lot with the direct electron folks on driving new methods. So.
Questions?
There's one right there.
It's called, in the experiment where you randomized the orientations of half of the particles, I guess also in that experiment, it will really depend on what resolution you are. So you might be able to do that and not see a big change if you are in the 6-7, but if you are like, 3 or 2.5, then you might do that, and then you actually don't get the same resolution. Would you agree or disagree?
Here I have a question. So all the the K2 Falcon, the DQE decrease as a function of a frequency. So the DE64, you show the figure, the MTF decrease as function of frequency. However, the MTF decrease. However, the DQE
stays flat.
Flat and even increase a little bit at the intermediate frequency range.
Right.
How do you explain that?
Well, because DQE is not just MTF.
It's also a different trajectory compared to the other cameras. Why is that?
I guess it's just because of the different noise characteristics, right? There's a lot that goes into the noise, because the DQE would be MTF over noise power spectrum. And so each camera would have a different noise power spectrum depending on its engineering and the noise from the camera. So that's why. And with the DE, it always needs to be flat and then tailing off.